Distributing the Future broadcast September 11, 2006, Life Cycle.
The future is going to be bigger than the past. There's going to be more happening. Connected systems, connected devices, connected data. What can we do in that world that will be interesting, powerful, and useful?
Changing the world through capturing the knowledge of innovators.
The future is here. It's just not evenly distributed yet.
Welcome to Distributing the Future from O'Reilly Media. I'm Daniel Steinberg, and each week we bring you the technology and the people behind what you use now and what you'll use next. Releasing early and often, Mark Lukowski contrasts his experience at Microsoft and at Google. Simon Phipps says that lock-in is the new lockout, and we preview EuroOSCON. Six Apart's Anil Dash has a stack of services you might use to build your applications, and Damian Conway pokes fun at the world of Web 2.0 businesses. Almost a year ago, we talked to James Duncan Davidson about taking photographs at O'Reilly conferences. He said that everything changed when he tightened up the feedback loop. In the old days, when you'd shoot film, he'd have to develop the pictures and get them back in the hands of your clients, and then they'd have to decide what to do with them. Now he can shoot a keynote presentation in the morning and have pictures on a Flickr stream or on the official conference website or on slides projected on the big screen up front in less than a day. We all feel that difference when we shoot pictures for the first time with a digital camera. We shoot the picture and then we look at the screen to see how it came out. We can even show the pictures to the people we just shot. Now, especially when you're taking pictures of kids, that's a lot more meaningful than taking a picture one day and showing it to them, well, months later when you get around to getting the film developed. The same is true for developers building large commercial applications. Suppose you come up with a great idea for a feature in some application you're building. How long will it be before the feature makes it into your users' hands? How long before you get feedback from them and can improve on your idea? Mark Lukowski has been on both sides of this fence. While he was at Microsoft, he developed features that won't ship until almost a decade after he conceived of them. Now at Google, he thinks what he might like to add to applications he's working on that might release, well, after lunch. He explains to Tim O'Reilly that
it's a different world, I'll tell you. I was at Microsoft for a long, long time, 16 years working on Windows. And there, you know, I thought it was a big deal to write a piece of code one day and wow, you know, we're going to be in beta in a year and out to customers a year after that and deployed a couple years after that and patched a few years after that. So the rate of, you know, getting your code out to the world is just a different story. I came to Google and I was working on a prototype application that was based on GData, and we had a static application that was driven off of files. And I remember about 6 o'clock at night, the guy I was working with said, "Hey, we have to make this persist the data because we have a demo on Friday and I don't have time to do it. Can you do it?" And I'm thinking, God, you know, I'm new to this open source stuff. You know, PHP, I've never written a PHP. And I've got to use a PHP and a MySQL. And I grabbed this 22-year-old kid and said, "Dave, come on over here. And just all I need you to do is show me how to put something into the database and get something out of the database." 5 minutes after he was in my office, we had a little, you know, three-line PHP app that was reading and writing stuff into the database. I did a get, and I pulled something out and did a put something in. And I thought, oh, wow, this is amazing. And I compared that to my time at Microsoft, where if I wanted to do something like that, step one would be install Visual Studio and reboot 13 times. install SQL Server and realize that, oop, Visual Studio is broken now. So go back and install another version of Visual Studio. So it was just an eye-opener to me to how productive you can really be in this LAMP stack that I had, you know, heard so much about and fought against so violently in my past. I think the most eye-opening piece of it for me is this aspect of real-time development when you're doing a platform. Like, I'm working on some APIs right now. We have we did a quiet launch of this thing in June, and we have, you know, a group of developers that are pretty active talking to me, asking for features. And I can have a conversation in the morning, and that afternoon I can send a note out that says, "Hey, that feature that we were talking about earlier in the day, it's now live." And half an hour after that, I can get a note saying, you know, thumbs up or thumbs down. But basically, you can go from idea to code to test to deployment as fast as your service and your infrastructure allows. And you know, in this game of building APIs and building a developer platform, that means that I can have a real-time beta cycle. You know, which is, again, something very, very different from what I used to do at my old company, where I could write an API and it could literally be a year before I could get feedback from a developer and another 6 months before I could react to that feedback. I think that what we've enabled with web-based services and web-based APIs is this notion of a micro feature or a micro API, where I can turn on a piece of functionality very, very quickly, and if you design things correctly, you can do it without the, you know, tangled mash of spaghetti that says there's a dependency where if I turn this on, then everybody has to change your apps. It's a different way of thinking in terms of, I want to roll this out to the people that are ready to take it on, and I don't want them to have to buy into a whole bunch of other things. As a product goes through the alpha stages and the beta stages and whatnot, you are able to run as fast as you want to run. I think that once you get to a stable service, instead of every half hour, you might be down to two or three times a week. But you're certainly not in this mode. Well, I give you a story. I was working on Exchange, a feature in Microsoft Exchange before I left, my last piece of work there. This is in 2004. I'm working on a feature, and it was a very aggressive feature, very cool thing. We decided that it didn't make the cut for the next version of Exchange. Well, the next version of Exchange, I think it's Exchange 2007, which will be deployed, I don't know, what is it, 2-year adoption cycle maybe? So code that I was writing in 2004 was maybe going to get into customers' hands in 2009. We decided my feature was too aggressive and that it would have to wait till 2013 or something like that. So can you imagine a 9-year development cycle? And here I am now thinking, you know, hey, what can we get done by September 1st? And, you know, what can you turn on next week? Hey, can you fix this for a demo next Thursday? And so it's a different time scale, and you're able to, you know, plan your life around, you know, this is what I'm going to do for this week, and these are the features that we're going to light up in the API during that week. I mean, go look at the Maps blog, and you'll notice each blog post has a list of API version numbers that were rolled out that week. And you know, very often they'll roll out 2 or 3 copies of the API a week. And that's a big product.
Mark Lukowski, Technical Director of Engineering at Google. Son Simon Phipps explains that the one thing he watches out for in an application that's trying to capture his attention is data lock-in. What he wants most from a new piece of software is
the freedom to leave, the freedom to stop using the software. Lock-in is the new lockout. If you want to scare away early adopters like me, the best way to do it is to make sure that your cool new toy is a roach motel where the data can only check in. My calendar, for example, is in iCalendar format. So if you want me to try your new calendaring thing, you'd better make sure I can import my calendar into it. And then once it's in there, you'd better be able to accept appointments in iCalendar and vCalendar format. It would be really handy if you had a published API that let other applications use the calendar too. And I'm not going to be using it for very long if, as I add value to my data, I'm not going to be able to get it out and move it to some other tool that I want to use. These different tools that I'm using all have the shared attribute that they're based around open, freely usable standards for formats and protocols and interfaces. We used to talk about interoperability, and you'll hear people talking about interoperability today. But interoperability is actually not very interesting to me. I'm not very interested in only being able to import. I'm not very interested in being allowed to play in your market, which is what people seem to mean by interoperability today. What I want is substitutability. I want to know that I can throw your software away, not because I hate it, but because I'm a butterfly dancing from software product to software product. And you're not going to get my attention if you try and stick me to the first flower I land on. That's why Stuart Butterworth is so smart with Flickr's policy of exchanging APIs with other companies that make their APIs available. And paradoxically, Flickr keeps my business because I'm free to leave at any time. Not quite as free as I'd like to be. I can't get all of my data out in bulk. I hope someone's writing an application to do that. You can see this over my blog subscriptions. I'm still on blog lines. I tried out BlogBridge, and I decided I preferred to be on the web. So I exported my OPML subscription back again, and I'm back using the tool that I started with. When using the data demands only a particular vendor's software, or some kind of licensing relationship, or some boundary traversal, you'll lock out the early adopters. And more importantly, innovation will find it harder to transfer.
Sun's chief open source officer, Simon Phipps. EuroOSCON is just around the corner. Here's a quick promo we put together for it. The second European open source convention, EuroOSCON, is September 18th to 21st in Brussels, Belgium. Nat Torkington and Nikolai Nyholm preview the conference, and Nikolai explains that
open source in Europe is still a view of idealism, total cost of ownership. Can we bring down our costs on running a project? If we want to sort of take open source from the domain of pure coding into democracy, culture, business, we need to make people understand and frame open source in a wider context than just the code and the licenses which are being pushed out.
We have tried to make the conference very practical so that you can learn things in the conference that will shape how you think about business, shape how you think about the projects that you engage in and how you build new projects so that you can take advantage of the pioneering work that open source did and build a community and protect what you've got and make a project that gets better with every new participant in it, rather than being limited to the old styles of production, which were very linear in their growth.
Open source is all about leveraging.
A good example here is what Lego is doing with bringing in their users to help design the new next version of the Mindstorms Next. Basically leveraging the customers and by opening up, getting a much closer relationship with customers and having the customers help build their own stuff.
Sessions like Democracy, A Hacker's Guide by the My Society folks, the guys who did They Work For You and other such applications in England, will show you how to leverage public knowledge to create a better working system.
Tornar Tanas, who's a science author, who's explored things like generosity. Why is this happening? Why does this make sense for a business to engage in? Why is this something which is sustainable by human nature?
Nikolai is thinking about the big picture.
That's certainly true. Meanwhile, Nat's thinking about
the more immediate needs of developers and managers and saying, what kind of cool technologies can I take away from the conference right now and go and use? So we're talking about Ajax. We have sessions on Ajax, on mobile devices, sessions on Jabber, the messaging protocol that's gluing a lot of applications together. Lots of Java stuff in there, user interfaces. We're trying to make sure that technology is discussed in the conference that you can walk away with and use tomorrow.
JP Ramaswangi will be looking at even how big banking organizations can learn from the do-it-yourself mythology applied within IT, within the make hackers.
There are plenty of opportunities for people with widely different backgrounds to learn from each other, and not just in sessions.
We'll also on Wednesday have the .org day, where we'll have a bunch of the open source projects presenting and hopefully spur more discussion on and assistance into each of these and uses of each of these projects.
With the MakeFest, the makers who are going to be there demonstrating their stuff, they exemplify this trend of users creating value, whereas before there was obviously seen as, well, only those anointed few who are the producers can create the value. But in fact, it turns out that as with conferences, as with everything, the value is created by the larger number of people. And so these are people who, by the companies who sell them things, they are viewed as consumers, passive consumers. It's an awful word. But they are turning that around, breaking the seals on their products, voiding the warranties, and making the products more useful and creating things that the manufacturers had never imagined were possible. And that's what we're hoping to celebrate, both in software and in hardware and in culture, politics, and business.
That's EuroOSCON September 18 to 21st in Brussels. Find out more information at conferences.oreilly.com. Remember,
really what makes open source tech is code in a community governed by a license.
The European Open Source Convention from O'Reilly Media. Asking the big questions about open source.
What can we learn about this that we can apply to democracy, that we can apply to business, that we can apply to culture?
Anil Dash has got something to sell you, but both the price and the pitch are a little unusual. His concern is that now that we're swimming in Web 2.0 applications, it's important that, well, they don't suck. That's the pitch. The product are pieces of the stack that Six of Parts products are built on top of.
So if Web 2.0 is so great and blogs are so great, why are we so worried about sucking? It's easy. There's been success. And what happens when you have success is people tend to get carried away. And what you get when people get carried away is something where you have a completely meaningless product, right? You have people making these pitches that are unattractive. We're the fourth most popular mobile application for tagging podcasts. That's all you've got, right? Like, that's not that compelling. You know, I usually see these things and I'm thinking, whatever, that's not that exciting to me. My goal is to make something meaningful. What I really want to do is not get on TechCrunch, but to have something that impacts people's lives. And I don't think that's too low a goal to set, right? So you want to ask yourself, who would want to use this? Is it making my life better? And those are hard questions, but they're worth asking. Because if you don't ask them, you end up with something that sucks. Anything that sucks could be great. It's an expression of potential. So the ways to tell if you're sucking is you succeed in your plan and nobody's any happier. They're miserable when you use your application, right? Or you succeed in building something and then you have to shut it down. Either because you couldn't scale it or the people in your community were driving you nuts. I think a lot of us have had that experience. There's a lot of different things that can keep you from being able to scale or to grow your service to help people make those meaningful connections. And that sucks when that happens. So anything that doesn't scale, not just in the technology sense, but in the human sense, is a problem. And then there's other problems, right? So it's not just that you can't scale. There's also this issue of openness, right? So we have open data and feeds and APIs. What's the most glaring thing that's missing is a lot of Web 2.0 applications are in open source. And it's not, you know, it's not a litmus test. It's not something that somebody's doing right and somebody's doing wrong. But the thing that I think comes up a lot is even the best sites aren't necessarily open enough, right? So the ones that are doing something meaningful might not be open. And it's not a quick case of you can't have parts that are closed. Like, this might be heresy to say here, but it's we have stuff that's closed, we have stuff that's open, and it's okay if the parts that are closed are there to help support and help you make real useful contributions back to the community, right? So it's not just table scraps. The thing I notice is, you know, and talking to Nat, people give you the part that helps them get customers and they'll open source that, right? Or they'll take the toolkit that they don't use anymore and they'll open source that. And it has to be something substantial, something meaningful, something that actually has value to a developer to give back to the community. And that should be something that we do look for and that we do have as a checklist. So if you have that chance to make people's lives better, what does it take to do it? What's the technology? Well, you know, it wouldn't be OSCON without a LAMP stack slide, right? So you have to talk about Linux, Apache, MySQL, or MySQL. And you layer on top of that PHP, Python, and Perl. And people treat this as if it's a solved problem, right? Like, that's it. You drop these in, they work. And this is a known solution. This is a working solution, but it's not enough. And you need to have a plan that addresses your business logic or your application logic. It goes to components that help you scale. It goes to components that help people make a meaningful experience, right? And I want to kind of emphasize that point, that a plan that's insufficiently detailed is not going to be useful to you, right? It's something you need to be known about. So it's a long list, right? There's all these things. Not coincidentally, every single one of these types of components that you need to build a real scalable service is something we want to give you for free. So if you're looking for smart load balancing, we'll offer you PearlBout. If you're looking for memory caching, Memcached. If you need a scalable file system, there's Mogile. And for real-time messaging, we've brand new, we're announcing DJabberD. Right, so there's something where these are all components that are free, they work like crazy, we want you to build on them. Keep that checklist in mind. Is what you're seeing open, and is it meaningful, right? Does it suck?
Anil Dash, VP of Professional Products for Six Apart. We close with an even more outrageous product pitch. The price isn't nearly as good as the last one. On the other hand, the products are purely imaginary. Just some of the, well, what he calls crap, that Damien Conway has been thinking about. Under the broader heading of OpenTalk 2.0, Conway introduces a suite of products that lampoons much of the overeagerness in the Web 2.0 space.
So I guess you're wondering, what is OpenTalk 2.0, Service Mark? Well, more importantly than anything else, it's an opportunity for me to meet you. Come and talk to you. Who am I? Well, if you don't know me, my name is J. Damien Conway, PhD. I'm a 40-year-old Australian Perl hacker, 167-centimeter tall bodybuilder. I like fast cars, smart women, smart cars and fast women, Italian cop shows, ambient music of the 1980s. I eat pasta, I drink tea. My last proctology exam was clear. So what is OpenTalk 2.0? Well, before we get to that, I'd like to take a moment to tell you about an incredible new venture that we're setting up in collaboration with some of the biggest names in the industry. Now, I can't actually give you those names just yet, but they're really, really big. We are still looking for more investors. We still need about US $10 million, preferably in small non-sequential bills. So before we get into it, I've been listening to the conference this week, and I just like to officially announce it. We have won. We've entered the mainstream consciousness. We've subverted the dominant paradigm. We've jumped the shark. We've banged the monkey. So I think we should give ourselves a round of applause for having achieved that. So our goal is to help you through the next phase. That is the monetizationary consolidation, the commoditizational transitioning, the exploitatively parasitization, and the opportunistic market decapitalization that will inevitably follow. So, by the way, we are hiring. So if you're interested, please come up and see me afterwards. Our new venture is called Crap. And I'm sure you all want to know what crap is. Well, we're initiating an entirely new paradigm in open software development. It's really a change as fundamental as the invention of silicon, or indeed perhaps even the caffeinated mint. So what is crap? Well, you've seen how these large corporations are building up these enormous patent portfolios. What about the open software movement? Who's looking after us nerds then? Well, CRAP is. So CRAP stands for Close Standards XML Acquisition of Patents. So we are an aggregator of patent information, which is then licensed onto you for very reasonable and easy to pay amounts to anyone who wants to use it. And we podcast them to you in a DRM'd XML format, which is very easy to get. So what patents do we already own? Well, we have some of the really important patents in the open source arena. So we have the patent on a method of replacing an arbitrary letter in an acronym with X, but still repeating the original letter. We have the patent on storing integers in 2's complement, using 2 or more fonts in the same GUI, pressing different mouse buttons with the same finger, and we're currently finalizing on the big one, the one that we think will actually change the business landscape, the business model for open source. We are in the process of patenting the process of invalidating patents by demonstrating prior art. Because once we got that sucker under control, everything else will fall into place. So how do you license them? Well, we make it really easy to do that. We have a free patent browser, an integrated online store, which we call iCrap. It's a really nice technology. It works really well. We're also introducing today a new technology called PASCO. So it's really, really simplifies the licensing of patents. It's basically a secure, transparent, leveraged, vertical, networked, integrated, goal-oriented, symmetrically competitive, per-use authentication scheme. So every patent licensee or end user has a unique client certification name, or CCN, as we call it. And very conveniently, your CCN is in fact your CCN, your credit card number. And that works extremely well because it gives us a unique identifier worldwide, it guards against any kind of fraud or piracy, and it integrates your username and your password and the payment mechanism into one 16-digit number. Or you can just let iCrap remember it for you. So every application that integrates PASCO can collect a royalty every time the patent technology is used within the application. So we call these things micro-patent micro-payments. And remember the motto, every time you PASCO, We collect $200. Hey, crap. We're getting away from that tired old eat through your venture capital and then IPO business model. That worked last century, but, you know, it's kind of... We're moving to a much better business model, which is eat through your venture capital and then be bought out by one of the big guys. You know, by Yahoo or Google or Oracle or Microsoft. We want to help you compete asymmetrically by de-levelizing the enterprise playing field. We want to make the latest innovations in patent technology, in marketing, in browsing, in operating systems, all of these available to you. Why? Because we are you, only much better dressed. So when you think of patents and licensing and Pavlovian marketing and revolutionary technology suites on rails, and when you think of corporate keynote infomercials, I want you to think crap.
Thanks to Tim O'Reilly, Mark Lukowski, Simon Phipps, Nat Torkington, Nicholas Nyholm, Anil Dash, and Damian Conway. If you have ideas to share with us, send email to future@O'Reilly.com. I'm Daniel Steinberg. Distributing the Future is a production of O'Reilly Media. Special thanks to David Bettino for composing and performing this theme. Visit David at Batmosphere.com. This program was produced on macOS 10 Tiger using Soundtrack Pro, Bias Peak, and Audio Hijack Pro.